who's on first.
Governor, if you are asked by the Lieutenant Governor to testify on his behalf in Washington, will you?
Well, I haven't been asked, and I know nothing more than that story that appeared in the paper, and abide by the law if I'm asked or subpoenaed or whatever has to be done.
You abide by the law if you're subpoenaed, but what if there, if the Lieutenant Governor just merely asks you to come back, would you?
Well, I think that I would, yes, as I say, whatever is right to do.
The California State Employees Association asked you to sign a letter agreeing to arbitration of a dispute over wages and benefits. Would you agree to arbitration?
No, I don't believe that we have the right to do such a thing in the dealings with public employees. Now, we've been meeting with them regularly, and I think they have given a quite distorted position in regard to this situation. In the present budget, there was almost $250 million put in for increases and benefits for the state employees. Now, that nearly $250 million will be in the coming budget with another $127 million on top of it. And we took the recommendations of the personnel board completely and accepted them without any change last year in putting that money in. But for them to propose arbitration, they work for the people. And therefore, in dealing with them, the elected representatives of the people must be the last word other than the people themselves. And for the elected representatives to delegate their responsibility to someone else not chosen by the voters is to put in some arbitrator's hands the right to make a settlement that could result in imposing a tax increase on the people.
There's a very serious possibility of a general strike of state employees.
I hope not. I have a great faith in public employees of this state. I think we have the highest level, and as I've said it many times, the finest employees of any state in the union. I would hope that most of them would be more responsible. And frankly, I don't think they've been given a true picture by the hierarchy, the leadership of the CSEA. Strikes are illegal if I'm part of public officials. I would uphold the law.
I'm kind of a composite sketch of the SLA, or pardon me, the San Francisco Police Department has of this so-called zebra killer. The stop and search technique, the tactics being used by the police department, has produced nothing up to date. Do you still feel that the tactic should continue in light of growing opposition in the community that this type of tactic smacks of racism?
Well, I don't and can't put myself as an authority on law enforcement or police tactics, what you use in what is an almost unprecedented situation. I think the bulk of the people in San Francisco have been remarkably patient with this. At the same time, I think that there is a great responsibility placed on law enforcement that they should use restraint and not abuse this program or what they are attempting to do. But as to its effectiveness or whether it's going to help in the situation, that's a decision for law enforcement to make. $1 billion in the present year. Now, the money that we could not give to the employees because of the ruling by the Wage and Price Commission in Washington has been held in a fund, and now that a decision has been handed down, they are going to get that additional money. Now, once you institute that, that means that that same $250 million is in the budget for the coming year. But on top of that, what it amounts to is the employees of California will be getting, over the two-year period, a 19% raise. And that is quite different than the figures that are being bandied about by this little group over at the headquarters of CSEA.
Was part of the employee strike, this was the case that your administration then bargained with?
No. As a matter of fact, they came back in. We told them the five-day thing, and they came back in at the end of the 5 days. And we did negotiate because we were aware ourselves at that time. Yes, we were aware ourselves that that was one of the departments that we had discovered was far below comparable scale outside or in other branches of government. Now, we've since then been had an ongoing study of the whole state, all state employees, to find out where we stood with regard to the law that says their salaries and their prerequisites must be comparable to the outside. And we found in some areas we were much closer or even above, and in other areas we were much below. So what we've been trying to do with salary scales is now bring this picture up. This meant that in some instances where someone was already above scale, they weren't going to get the increase that another department might get where there was a great differential. That's what I meant. I think it was in the five-day thing, or maybe I'm wrong. And then I thought it was the 5 days, and they went back to work.
They
no, that's what I that's what I was intending to say. We did not negotiate while they were out.
Several questions, if I may, on your campaign reform package. One, if you move the primary date from June to September, would you also have a separate presidential primary and presidential years, or would you thereby force? And since the conventions are normally in July and August, would you also be forcing the presidential election to be conducted much later as well? Because you can't very well have a convention without a California delegation.
Well, as a matter of fact, when I made the presentation to the Better Business Bureau in San Jose, I brought up that very instance of what could happen. And I said, since California has taken the lead in a number of other things that have then been, other states have followed suit, and even the national government has followed suit, that would be our hope that they would, that the entire the national elections would also change to fit this pattern, because this is obviously where the greatest cost lies in campaigning, and where the problem is just as great as it is here. So it's our hope that we could show the way. No, maybe if California is that powerful.
Have you any criticism of the fact that prior to World War II, the presidential primary was held in June, and the state primary was held in August?
I wasn't aware of that.
Well, can I continue on this, Marty? Let me finish my question.
Related.
No, we have not had a complete study of that, although I'm familiar with enough of it to know that our concern with Prop 9 has to do with the fact that we have already passed legislation having to do with conflict of interest and full disclosure. And in both instances, Proposition 9 would take us back to less protection in both those fields than we presently have. It would supersede the present laws. There are some other things that we think are wrong, and we believe that the package we're presenting will accomplish. We have no quarrel with the goal and the aim of Proposition 9. And this is why we've had a task force for several months that has finally come forth with this program that we're recommending. We think this program is better than Proposition 9. It doesn't contain some of the defects, and in some instances achieves the same things, and even in some we think a little stronger.
Will you take a definite position before the primary on Prop 9, or leave it at that?
We have not. As you know, we always sit down with the propositions and go through all of them and arrive at a decision studies, and we haven't had that yet.
Now, you also suggest in this package that no one but only individuals would be allowed to contribute, not organizations, with the exception of the party and their chartered groups. Could, under your proposal, could parties receive contributions from corporations or labor unions? Would they then become
funded? No. But a party could receive contributions from individuals as individual members and then use that money in support of campaigns of party candidates.
Spelled out in the bill that the corporation, that no groups may contribute to parties as well as to individuals?
Oh, this will be spelled out, please, and the drafting is going forward now. Yeah, we don't want to interfere with the party structure. It's part of our two-party system here.
And then the third point, and two of the different bills would bar both, one would bar lobbyists, the other one would bar judges from contributing to campaigns. Is there, in your mind, any question of the constitutionality of that those provisions? Both Lieutenant Governor Reinicke and Controller Florin, I suggested that it may be unconstitutional, an infringement upon First Amendment freedoms, to prevent anyone from contributing as an individual to any campaign.
Well, we just happen to believe that the judge falls into a particular position where he is supposed to be above all partisanship and above all bias, and he has to run as a nonpartisan. And therefore, we thought that we would limit him to campaign contributions that would involve only his own campaign when he had to run, he or she. No. Any and all judges that have to run as they do it.
Lobbyists? What's the reasoning there? Doesn't a lobbyist have the right?
Because we don't think that the lobbyist is contributing his own money in the present system. He's contributing on behalf of his client, and so this would be organization giving again.
What is your realistic appraisal of the chances that your program will get through the legislature? The speaker yesterday told us that the proposal was self-serving and he didn't like it.
Yes, I read the speaker's position on that, and of course I can understand his concern, because now that we have full disclosure, the bulk of his contributions in his own campaign apparently comes from lobbyists, corporations, and labor groups, and to suggest that it is self-serving in some way is a little hard to swallow. Now, you, ladies and gentlemen, now with the full disclosure laws, have full access to all the facts, and all you have to do is take a look at where the contributions come from for any of the candidates, and you can stand on those figures. This implication that he made, that the old stereotype image that the Republicans are all rich people and the Democrats are all poor people, is not borne out by the facts. Now, the plain facts are that for far back as 25 years, which is about as far back, I guess, as there is an accounting of any kind, the Republican Party has outdone the Democratic Party by a great distance in the amount of contributions, the percentage of their contributions that come from small donors. As a matter of fact, the figure is about 5-1. And to suggest that we are the party of the powerful and the rich ignores the fact that we're outnumbered about 20-1 in the entertainment world, which is well known for its affluence and its high pay scales. We're outnumbered in the executive offices of the advertising industry, in the publishing field, in Wall Street bankers, by the other side. The opposition has its affluent people also, and right now we're having a primary campaign in which three leading Democratic candidates have received contributions that are more than double what has been contributed to the campaigns of the two leading Republican candidates, plus which the latest reporting shows that some very hefty and healthy corporate gifts found their way into Democratic candidates' hands. So he's just blowing smoke and talking campaign talk when he tries to point out they'll be benefited. I'm quite sure that he objects to our plan because of the limitation on lobbyists and corporation and labor organization gifts. But I would give one last plug. What is more out of line with our democratic system than the pronouncement by the CSEA hierarchy that they were going to have $500,000, $500,000, to buy a governor candidate. They didn't use the term buy, but they said exactly the same thing, that they would give to that candidate that would do the most for them. Now, that is hardly my definition of democracy.
Wasn't that also, that wasn't accepted at the CSA convention, though, was it?
Well, I don't know. If you know something, I don't know.
Well,
I don't know.
I understand that proposal was rejected.
That restores my faith, or amplifies my faith that I expressed earlier, in the employees themselves. But the announcement was made by this organization, which incidentally is one of the two top spending lobbying organizations in Sacramento. The California Teachers Association and CSEA spend more on lobbying than any other group.
Excuse me.
In the September primary, would you recommend that the national convention be held?
Oh, I think it could be held very quickly. It could be scheduled to follow in certainly by the middle of September, easily within a week.
Excuse me, I don't think you finished answering my question. In view of the Speaker's opposition, what chances, realistically, do you think your program has in the legislature of getting to your desk?
Well, he's going to have a problem with that, because he is also quite opposed to Proposition 9. Well, he does support Proposition 9? Well, then at least he's then against both of the proposals there. But I think he's going to find a great many legislators that don't want Proposition 9, and so they're going to be faced with some choices.
Your package of reforms that you're going to present then, should we construe that as an effort to offset Proposition 9?
No, as I say, this is the result of a task force that's been working for several months, and we think we have a better package. We believe that, and I would think that the Speaker would agree with this, that we believe that the normal legislative process is a proper place to settle this.
You didn't say anything about financial disclosure in your package, and I wanted to ask you, is there any chance that you voluntarily filing the document required by the Moscone bill pending the Supreme Court decision on that?
Well, I haven't given any thought to that till the decision is made about this.
Some officials who are filing voluntarily despite the legal uncertainty of the Moscone bill. And
well, I hadn't given it any thought. I certainly had no hesitation about doing it if the law was upheld and if the law was enforced. I was naturally going to do it.
File one, would that be an indication of running for something?
Well, now you've given me a reason for not filing one, Squire.
Pay a state income tax last year?
Yeah.
Governor, on another subject, an initiative drive has started to authorize up to 1,000 off-track betting places in California, plus Nevada-type gambling in the Riverside County desert area. And I wondered what your position on those type of proposals was.
Oh, well, this is the first I've heard of that. Certainly have to be in such a way as to protect the track. I know that in New York, off-track betting has created some very great problems because the track, to my understanding, does not share, and the off-track betting has cut in very much to the place that you wonder if the tracks can continue to support racing and offer racing. But I haven't had an opportunity to study the other of loosening up on gambling.
There's a thought about bringing about a type of gambling, the slot machine and so forth, in California.
Well, as I say, I normally don't and won't comment on legislation that may be pending until it amounts to something. My first reaction is one that I'd have to wonder whether we were benefiting the state of California or not.
Do you think that 2 months would be enough time for you or any other possible presidential candidate, just using you hypothetically, to mount an effective, to not only organize a campaign, but to mount a campaign for the presidency of the United States?
Two months.
About 7 weeks. 7 weeks, you're talking about the general campaign. But you are also talking about you must take into consideration the fact of what would be done nationwide. We're talking about national primaries that we're not talking about. I mean, this is general talk of something. There are now scores of primaries throughout the nation. Obviously, long before the general election gets underway, the people of the United States have been well exposed to all the candidates. I think in the 1972 campaign, the long and hard-fought primary battle on the Democratic side to select a candidate, I think all of us have to admit that most people in the country were expressing their weariness with the whole atmosphere of campaigning long before we ever got to the general election. Now, a country like England, they have 3 weeks total for campaigning. I know ours is a bigger country, and I certainly don't suggest that we adopt the British pattern here, 3 weeks, but I believe that 7 weeks, particularly since you would come right on the heels of the momentum of the primaries. One of the things that, from my own experience and my own two campaigns that I saw and that adds to the cost, is that you have a primary, and it's over in June, early in June, and then theoretically you don't start campaigning until Labor Day. So the general campaign really gets underway at that time. But what happens is you stay alive during all those months from June to September. You have to keep your headquarters and your organization and so forth going, so the expenses go on. And while there may be a lull in the campaigning, it still goes on and goes on. And then on Labor Day, everybody pretends they're starting their campaign.
Normal presidential election, what happens is that the one who's the victor then tries to pull together the other people and find positions for him in his campaign and create some sort of unity. How are you going to be able to do that in the short span of 7 weeks?